This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. Motor neuron disease is a progressive condition that attacks the nerves, weakening the muscles, which gradually waste away. The Ice Bucket Challenge sent awareness of the motor neuron disease soaring to the highest level last year. The disease took the life of Malaysian football legend Mokhtar Dahari in 1991 after a three-year battle with the disease. The best-known international personality that we all know afflicted with it is 73-year-old theoretical physicist Stephen Hawking. Malaysia has an estimated 2,000 people living with motor neuron disease at any one time. Here to tell us more about this disease is Professor Dr. Goh Kian Jin, a consultant neurologist, together with Vice Chairman of the MND Malaysia, Mr. Su Chiong Fat. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. How are you today?
Thank you, Meera.
Professor, you just want to go on and explain to us what motor neuron disease is?
Thank you, Meera. Motor neuron disease is actually a neurodegenerative disorder. By that, it is a disorder in which the nerves, in this case the motor neurons, gradually degenerate. And as a result of this degeneration, the typical symptoms that patients present with would be muscle weakness, and then this is followed by wasting of the muscles. And of course, this will gradually start maybe in the limbs, but will progress as time goes on to involve other parts of the body. So the typical involvement would be either weakness of the legs or the arms. Occasionally, patients may start off by feeling weakness in their throat muscles, so they may feel that there is a difficulty in swallowing. Occasionally, it may be the tongue muscle, so they may have difficulty in speaking clearly, so their voice becomes rather slurred. And in the end, it may involve other parts or the body in general. So this, of course, leads to quite significant disability in patients with motor neuron disease.
I'm trying to get inside the body, Professor. What is your motor neuron? The nerves, we know.
So the motor neuron is basically the nerve cells that lead to the nerves that control our muscles. As you may be well aware of, muscles actually move all parts of our body. From our limbs, our chest wall to help us breathe, our abdominal wall muscles, our swallowing muscles, our tongue, all those are muscles. And so all muscles are sort of controlled by nerves, and these nerves originate from the motor neurons. Having said that, motor neurons also come from the brain. So there are certain parts of the brain where this origin of the motor neurons, and then they will, move down through the spinal cord and then connect with the nerves that supply our muscles. So in fact, it is a disease that involves the whole nervous system.
And do we know why the motor neurons start to degenerate?
Well, unfortunately, the cause of nerve degeneration is not quite not elucidated very clearly. There are many sort of possible ways the nerves can degenerate. I think the most obvious thing is that this is usually a disease that tends to occur in the older person. So it is an aging process. But having said that, we have had patients who present rather early, maybe even in their 30s or 40s. But typically, this is usually in the later middle age to elderly age group.
Anyone in particular who's at higher risk of getting the disease?
Well, we don't know for sure. I mean, there have been sort of rather tantalizing sort of, things that have come out in the medical literature. For example, about a decade or two ago, during the first Gulf War, for example, they thought that there were a higher number of American soldiers who had developed this after they went to the first Gulf War. So was this an exposure to some toxins? But the actual toxin was never found. There were also papers that came out and mentioned that maybe footballers, and you've had mentioned our own Muqtada Hari, but in Europe, they had found that some professional footballers may have had a higher chance of motor neuron disease. But again, this has not been confirmed to be true. So we don't know for sure. Yeah.
Where do you see gaps, Professor Goh? I mean, you see a lot of people with motor neuron disease. First of all, would you say it's a rare disease?
Well, it is, in the scheme of things, rarer than most diseases. But I think if you ask the average neurologist, we will have seen quite a number of patients with motor neuron disease in the course of our careers. As you mentioned, the usual prevalence, that means the number of people with motor neuron disease at any one time, would be roughly about 5 per 100,000 population. So that may work up to about 1,005 to 2,000 patients in Malaysia. We certainly don't see all this number, I think. A large number of patients either do not seek medical attention at the hospital, or they may seek traditional medicine, or they may believe that this is a disease of older age and so there's nothing much that can be done. The gaps here, I think, are mainly awareness of the disease. So that's probably the most important thing, I think. Awareness not just in the public, but also in the medical fraternity, in terms of how to diagnose and to think about the presence of this disease. Then obviously in the more general medical picture, the biggest gap, of course, is that currently there's still no cure for motor neuron disease. Although there are many things that can be done to help patients with motor neuron disease. So sometimes when people think, oh, there's no cure, then there's no point seeing the doctor. But certainly there are still many things that can be done to help these patients with this kind of this disease and to help their disability.
Maybe Mr. Su can tell us a little bit more. Is that why the MND Malaysia was set up, to help, you know, support patients with motor neuron disease?
Yeah, actually MND Malaysia was set up about a year ago for the purpose of providing some support to all patients with MND and also caregivers to the patients. Because as a professor mentioned, once you have this disease, the patient becomes quite helpless. So they really need some support in providing them with a better quality of life in their remaining time of their life.
You have a personal experience in that your wife had motor neuron disease, your late wife?
Yes, she had it since 2003. Mm-hmm. So she had suffered the disease for almost 11 years. So at that time, we do not know what was the disease. So when we got the diagnosis, we were very surprised, very shocked actually, because it's something unknown. None of us were prepared. So it was a very tough time for the patients as well as the caregiver, because at that time there was nowhere to turn to for advice or for support, except that we have a hospice Malaysia. So it was a very, very tough time for us.
What did your wife struggle with most? I mean, you have your muscles sort of wasting away. Is that what's happening, Professor Goh, your muscles?
No, she had almost all the bad things about the MND. The limbs movement is entirely out. She could not speak. She could not swallow. She could not even laugh or cry properly. So started off with a slur speech, and then later on she lost all the ability to move. So initially she was telling me, please help to restore my speech. Mm-hmm. Especially when she was a very talkative person. So I think, to me, the most dreadful thing is that you cannot communicate with the patient, and you just do not know what the patient wanted.
What kind of assistive communication is available, Professor Goh?
Well, I think when you reach a stage where the patient is unable to communicate like what Mrs. Su had at that time, mm-hmm. That's a fairly advanced stage of disease. And if you look at the example of Professor Hawking,
where Stephen Hawking.
Yes, he came and I think he came to KL gave a lecture, and there was this so-called voice synthesizer.
Yeah.
So his voice sounds very synthetic. That would be sort of the very sophisticated, high-end way of communications. I mean, there are simple ways. You can have a picture chart, and if the patient can move his or her hands, they can point to certain things like they want, like food or a cup of drink or go to the toilet, you know, or where I feel pain and things like that. If the patient can still write a little bit, then that's still possible. If it reaches a stage where the patient is, you know, unable to speak and unable to move his or her limbs, that is where the difficulty comes on. Right now, apart from this sort of very rather more complicated computerized devices, that there are no real any sort of very specific things that we can do. Maybe picture charts, as I mentioned earlier. But I think we're talking about not just waiting until the patient reaches that stage, but rather to intervene and help these patients at an earlier stage.
How do you do that? I mean, there's no cure, as we know.
I think the first thing is to confirm the diagnosis. That's quite important.
Can it mimic other diseases?
Or rather, can other diseases mimic this?
Motor neuron.
Yes, of course it can. There are other nerve disorders that can also primarily affect the motor nerves. There are tests that neurologists can do. Typically, the test that we do is called electromyography. And that can sometimes tell us the differences between these disorders. Sometimes we need to do scans, for example, imaging of the spinal cord or the spine to see if there are compression of the nerves there. And if we have ruled out all those possible treatable causes and we have a picture that looks much like MND, then the key thing, of course, is to broach the diagnosis with the patient. Usually, it takes a while, as Mr. Su had mentioned, for the patients to fully understand this condition, because it's not something that people sort of readily know what you're talking about. So it may take more than one clinic session. It may take some discussion with the family members. And often, family members and patients may not want to accept the diagnosis immediately. Usually, if we have established a diagnosis, then the next thing is to actually get a multidisciplinary sort of approach in helping these patients. So we have to look at not just whether there are medications to help them relieve their symptoms. So there are many symptoms that we look at, for example, pain or discomfort. So medications may help that. We want to look at their disability, so we need our rehabilitation specialists to be there to advise in terms of physical therapy, occupational therapy to help them use their hands, speech therapy to assess, as you mentioned, the communication or the swallowing, because a speech therapist is also an expert in looking at the swallowing. We would look at the consistency of the food. We want to look at the nutrition, because I think more recent data now suggests that a good calorie diet and good nutrition will help the patients in terms of living a better and a more life.
So that is confirmed then, that high-calorie diet.
There are studies going on, but initial sort of results suggest that a higher calorie diet, usually high-carbohydrate, high-calorie diet, is actually quite helpful. In terms of psychological support, I mean, many patients will definitely feel depressed at their disability. And then later on, of course, there are other problems We've mentioned swallowing. Some patients may now complain maybe of a slight breathlessness because the muscles in breathing may be affected. And so they may feel more tired. They may not sleep well because when they are recumbent, they may find that, you know, it's not, they are not breathing so well. And then, of course, towards the end, there are this end-of-life issues that need to be addressed. So at UMMC, we are fortunate to have a palliative care unit, and we have consultants in palliative care who are interested in helping us with MND as well.
Mr. Su, do you not, you know, did you have the awareness, or did this multidisciplinary team even existed? Did it exist in 2003 when your wife was diagnosed?
Initially, of course, we didn't have that facility. So I have to learn the hard way how to handle the patients. And of course, we did get some help from the hospice Malaysia. But then that is only the nursing part of it. So the rest of it, I just have to learn the hard way. So because there was not really much information about this disease. I did not know about this when I was first diagnosed. So got to learn the hard way, either through the from the net, or sometimes you got some advice from Professor Goh. But very lately, we have a palliative care in the UMC. That will help a lot because other than nursing, we still have many other good advices from the doctors concerned.
Okay. Professor Goh, is it all about easing symptoms then when it comes to motor neuron disease?
Well, primarily that would be the case. In terms of medications or treatment that modify the disease progression, there is, now must be 20 years since its introduction, only one medication that has been proven. It's called Riluzole. Unfortunately, it's not the most, it's quite expensive. So it's variably, only a few patients can afford this. We don't have subsidies for this medication. It's not a widely prescribed medication anyway. And its effect is that it does slow down the progression of the condition, but not by a lot. So if patients can afford this medication, I mean, this is something that we have it available in Malaysia, so they can use this, they can take this medication. It's taken orally. In terms of its significance, it's not very clear. I mean, it doesn't reverse the progression of the disease. So I think by far more important is, as we mentioned, easing the symptoms, addressing the patient's concerns as well as the carer's concerns, and actually having a plan. So you know, you have a plan with the patient. This is how we would want to do. We will address symptoms as it comes along, and always have this open communication with the patient so that, you know, if there are any problems, they can contact the doctor in charge or the nurse in charge, so they're not felt that they're left on their own. I think that's important. And so with MND Malaysia coming on, that's a useful avenue as well for carers or
some
patients.
Kind of support, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. to actually get in touch with. And MND Malaysia then can get in touch with the professionals if necessary.
Okay, so we're discussing motor neuron disease. I always associate it with Ice Bucket Challenge, Moksadahari and Stephen Hawking. If you have a question for us, send it through. It's 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. We have Professor Dr. Goh Kian Jin, consultant neurologist, and Mr. Su Chiong Fat, who's a vice chairman of MND Malaysia. We're discussing motor neuron disease. There's going to be a public forum, actually, this 23rd of May, which is a Saturday. You want to tell me a little bit more about that, Mr. Su?
Well, this forum is basically aimed to promote the awareness of MND, and also provide some facilities for people who suspected something similar to that to have a better understanding. Yeah, but the core purpose of this is to promote awareness to all our people so that they can understand what it is. Okay, after you have got a diagnosis or diagnosed as having MND, what to do? Yeah, and that's where can you turn to, and what facilities can you provide to help the caregivers so that the caregiver can provide a better support to the patients in terms of nursing, in terms of the dietary, and also the normal care of the patients.
You want to share your experience with me, the journey as a caregiver, you know, while you were looking after your wife?
Firstly, you know, of course, it's quite a dreadful experience in a sense that I did not know what to do. And initially, the hardest thing is to accept that I have a patient with MND. So that will take some time, maybe 1 year, to accept the situations. After which, then we slowly look for the best way to help the patients to overcome the pain and also the suffering from not being able to speak to anybody else. Yeah. But unfortunately, at that time, not much has helped except through the reading and also from the net. So if we could have a society that can provide this sort of nursing or advisors or support, that would be very good. And that's why the MND Malaysia want to tell the public that we now have such an organization that can provide that kind of support to patients or people who suspected that they have that kind of disease. Yeah.
Does early diagnosis help at all, Professor Goh?
Well, I think sometimes it may not be so easy to make a diagnosis when the symptoms are very mild or very few. And often you may not be sure. So rather than, you know, to tell the patient or the family that, you know, it's a definitive diagnosis, it might be wise to just follow up the patient and observe. At the moment, if you are sure of the diagnosis, and of course you should make the diagnosis, and it's important in terms of advising the family and the patient what the disease is all about, the prognosis, that means what do they expect the outcome to be, and what are the options. Right. If you don't make the diagnosis, then you know you don't have you're not able to discuss with the patient all these things. So on one hand, you do not want to jump and make a diagnosis which may not be correct. So as doctors, sometimes we do not want to commit ourselves to a firm diagnosis until we are more sure. But having made a firm diagnosis, then it's important to communicate the diagnosis with the patient and to discuss these options. First of all, discuss what to expect, and nextly to discuss what options that are available. And there are options available.
What about complementary medicine, Mr. Su? Did you consider traditional medicine?
Well, I have tried, especially acupuncture. But after months of subjecting the patient to acupuncture, they did not seem to have any improvement. So after that, we also gave up.
What's your take on complementary medicine, Professor Goh?
Well, personally, I have to tell you, most of my patients will want to try some complementary medication.
Especially since there's no cure
as
such. Yeah.
I do not dissuade them. I'm quite honest with them. I tell them that based on medical science, we may not have any evidence. We do discuss what sort of complementary medications or treatments that they might want to undergo. If I feel that it does not harm them in any way, then I don't dissuade them. I think that family and patients feel that they need to have explored all options. You know, not to say that they don't trust what you tell them, but you know, they feel the need that they have to have tried their best.
It does give you some peace of mind, doesn't
yes.
it? Yeah. In 2013, a group of medical researchers published in The Lancet Neurology that we should begin to pursue motor neuron disease as the breakdown of a wider network rather than a discrete, vulnerable population of specialized motor neurons. What does that mean, and what are the implications of that?
Well, I think what's become more obvious to us over the last decade or so is that motor neuron disease is not limited to the motor neurons. For example, it's quite well known now that a number of motor neuron disease patients, as the disease progress, will develop other neurological problems. And one of the main things is that there is cognitive dysfunction. By that, I mean that they also lose some ability in terms of their cognition and their higher intellectual capabilities.
Like you would with dementia and Alzheimer's,
yes.
for an example? Okay.
So, but it's not a typical Alzheimer's type of dementia that these patients develop. It's often considered to be more of a frontal dementia. So frontal dementia patients not necessarily become more forgetful, but they may lose the ability to plan their activities so well. Some of them may lose the ability to speak. They lose the ability in language, and that's slightly different from the inability to speak because your vocal cord muscles are weak, but this is a slightly more language-wide problem. So it's well known now that this is also part of the degenerative process. So it's now quite obvious that the degenerative process, although it may start in the motor neurons, may then progress to involve other parts of the brain or other nerves as well. Yeah.
I think breathing is one of the most important thing which becomes a problem with people with motor neuron disease. Can there be long-term ventilation to help, for an example?
I think one of the key things would be to identify patients who have some difficulty with their respiration early. And the respiratory muscles, I think the main muscle that is involved is usually the diaphragm, as well as the chest wall muscles. And to identify them early and to give them respiratory support early. I think the trend now is not to talk about invasive ventilation, and by that I mean by putting in a tube to breathe for the patient, but to implement non-invasive ventilation early. And this would be giving patients respiratory support using machines such as positive airway pressure ventilator machines, you know, which can be applied by a face mask to the patient. And this may not necessarily be something that the patient needs to have on continuously. So this can give the patient some support, especially maybe at night when the patient is asleep.
Mm-hmm.
The other way in which sort of respiratory support can be helped is sometimes they just need intermittent oxygenation, or you know, they can take sips from a machine which helps the oxygenation of their lungs. And lastly, some patients may have difficulty in bringing up their secretions, so the phlegm and the sputum and whatnot. And so machines that assist in bringing up the phlegm, or cough assist machines, might be the other thing that helps. So that there are a number of assistive devices that may help these patients lead a much more comfortable life, and more importantly, help keep them active to continue to do what they want to do.
Are these devices costly? Because if the medication is already costly, then you have devices that
these
are costly.
These devices are costly.
Yeah, and then where do you go, right?
I mean, and so one of the things in which we came up with
MND
Malaysia came up with is also to help raise awareness, and also to drive some support from the public in raising funds to help this, you know, this unfortunate patients. So that is the other purpose of our...
I mean, if you think about it, 2,000 of them at any one time is really not a large number. So we can do a lot better for these patients, isn't it? Albert is asking via text message, my name is Albert. Can I know what systems that lead you to suspect one may have MND? My wife has slurred speech. Very vague, but, you know, your best shot.
I think the main thing is in MND, the main clinical point is that there is muscle weakness. And this muscle weakness is usually progressive. So, I mean, a lot of neurological patients will have muscle weakness. For example, if you had a stroke, you will have muscle weakness. But these conditions do not progress. In MND, unfortunately, the muscle weakness may start with one part of the body, but it may gradually progress to involve other parts of the body. So, like you asked me earlier, can it be possible to make early diagnosis? Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. But the moment you observe the patient and you notice that there is progression from one part of the body to another, that's where you start to realize that you might be dealing with MND.
What's taking so long for scientists to sort of come up with a cure? Everywhere I read, it says the lack of funding because numbers are small.
To be honest, yeah. I think the basic understanding of the underlying cause for MND is we still do not know exactly what happens.
Do we know if genetics play a part?
Genetics does play a part. I mean, it's been known for a very long while that some patients with MND actually have family members with MND. And so we call this familial MND or familial ALS. ALS stands for amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, which is the term that Americans tend to use.
And hence the ice bucket challenge.
Yes, it's the same thing. It means the same thing. And so we do know now that there are genes that can cause somebody, a family, for example, to have family members with MND. But on top of that, we also know that some genes, if you happen to carry this gene, you may not necessarily develop MND, but in a certain context, a certain number of these patients with the genes will develop MND. So the challenge now is to identify, so what are these factors that may make somebody who has a genetic susceptibility to develop MND, and maybe hopefully we can present that. But at the moment, there are many, as I mentioned earlier, many clues, but nothing really definitive.
As such, okay. Palliative care is what I want to touch on just before we leave. How does palliative care provide for motor neuron disease patients and at what stage?
We should have had our palliative care consultant here with me.
Yeah.
But basically, I think in my understanding, palliative care is to help patients deal with
in
many
life.
Things. And I think the view of the palliative care physician is rather more comprehensive than most specialists. So firstly, of course, palliative care deals with end-of-life issues like, and this can be physical issues like pain, disability, you know, incontinence and straightforward things like that, as well as psychological issues and emotional issues. It is a relatively new specialization in Malaysia, but I'm happy to say that this is a specialization now that is attracting more and more younger sort of specialists who have passed out now. A number of them have expressed interest in taking up this specialty. Usually palliative care physicians will be dealing with patients who may have terminal cancers and terminal heart disease and things like that. But really, MND is also, in a way, a disease that needs a lot of input from the palliative care physician. And we are fortunate to have a consultant who is extremely, experienced and well-trained in meeting the needs of patients with MND.
Mr. Su, just one more question for you. As a caregiver, what were some of your needs? I mean, psychological needs. How did you cope with that? And how do you share that experience with caregivers at the MND, who are part of the MND?
Well, I think that's one of the reasons why we organize this
public forum.
Forum on May 23rd, where we will definitely share some of my experience in giving care to my wife. Yeah. You see, to be able to provide good care, we have to really be very, very patient. We have to empathize the patients, and then we have to look for new ways and new skills to handle the patient in terms of physical needs. For example, going to the toilet, how to feed, and then how to avoid the patients getting bed sores and all these things. And even what type of food that we should provide for the patients. So this forum is extremely useful for the public in the sense that at least you understand more what the MND, once you've got the MND, what to do and where can we turn to. Or if you have already got a patient like this one, then maybe you can learn how to handle the patients more to provide the patient with a better life, a quality of life.
Professor Goh, the lifespan usually upon diagnosis is about 2 to 5 years. Mr. Su's wife lived for 11 years, am I correct?
Years.
And Stephen Hawking has been living for 50 years. So how do we determine the lifespan?
Well, I think you cannot predict. I mean, when you read the medical journals, what they're quoting is the sort of the average survival.
Mm-hmm.
I think for the individual patient, it's much more difficult to predict. I mean, we do know that there are some things that may suggest a shorter survival. For example, somebody who presents with swallowing difficulties rather than a weakness of the arms and legs, and we do have occasionally some patients like this where the first symptom is more of difficulty in swallowing. That might suggest a slightly shorter survival, and patients who have for example a poorer poorer functional score in terms of disability, then of course it would mean that the disease is a little bit more aggressive. But overall, I usually stress to the patient and their carers that we cannot tell. I mean, there is every chance that it might be a very slowly progressive disorder. So, you know, not to say that, you know, to think about a certain time period and give up, but rather to sort of concentrate on what problems you may face currently, what you would like to do, and how we as doctors, healthcare professionals, and lay support people, we can help you to continue to do what you like to do as long as possible.
Fantastic.
I think that would be the way to look at it.
So the public forum will be held on the 23rd of May from 9:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. at the Trauma and Emergency Building in University Malaya Medical Centre.
That's at Dewan Sekapo Sireh, on the first floor.
On the first floor. Mm. So if you'd like more information, you can email mndmalaysia@gmail.com. Or is there anything else?
Yeah, you can also call telephone number 017-238-9686.
Fantastic.
The forum is anyways free of charge. We welcome all to come to understand better what is MND.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining me today. That was Professor Dr. Goh Kian Jin, consultant neurologist, and Mr. Su Cheong Fat, who's the vice chairman of MND Malaysia. Make that date again. Find out more about motor neuron disease. As I said, if you're wondering what it is, think Ice Bucket Challenge, think Mokhtar Dahari, think Stephen Hawking. That forum, 23rd May, 9:30 to 12:30 p.m. at the Trauma and Emergency Building, University Malaya Medical Centre. This has been The Bigger Picture, FM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.